Good morning, afternoon, evening, depending on where you are. Welcome to our fifth session. I want to get that back up. I guess that's a good thing to start with. Welcome to our fifth session of our webinar. I hope I can make this work again. Okay, let's do this. Okay, you're getting it all in reverse. There we go. Okay. This session is called Secrets of Inner Happiness. It's our fifth session of the series of eight, and I had a little quandary if I should go with this session, which is really the session that we're scheduled for today, or switch it to dealing with difficulties, which is going to be our next session. And I really started to pair the dealing with difficulties class for this week because I felt like we left off last week with some things uncovered that I wanted to cover right away. But as I considered it, I realized what I want to do is put that off for another week and move into some secrets of inner happiness. We're going to still bring it together. We're weaving a lot of threads here. And I so appreciate the emails that you've been sending, and I'm sorry that I can't answer them all yet. I hope I'll get to. There's just a lot of things going on right now. But I am reading them and appreciating them and taking them in, and I'll show you I sent there's a little piece for me to share with you today. So I just want to... Last week we did Stepping Forward, which was leaving behind our past mistakes and pain, mostly focusing on things that we were in control of, or things that are in our lives that are blocking us, both, but certainly the things that we're in control of. We talked about doing tshuva for some of those things. I want to continue with that, but we'll continue next week in our class on dealing with difficulties. And in terms of the emails, I'll ask you if you have specific difficulties, and we did go through some of them last week, just listing what some of them are, that you would like me to address, please email me that, and I will work on that. A lot of you sent in some things in the Getting to Know You document, so I will be dealing with that. But if you have something that you'd like me to work with for next week in terms of dealing with difficulties, please email me about that. This week we're going to focus on the happiness so that next week we can work on dealing with some of the difficulties that are blocking our happiness. And I want to start with a question. One of our participants, Jake, is willing to help the rest of the participants with a program called OneNote, if anybody's interested or has that. So I'm curious if anybody has that and is familiar with that. You can just type that into your question box if you have OneNote. But even if you... Excuse me, even if you don't, he's willing to help you set it up. It's a way to use the my lectures, anybody else's lectures or PowerPoint presentations, slides and documents, and to make a notebook out of them. You can take notes along the way when somebody's lecturing. So if anybody's interested in creating their own notebook of these classes or any other workshop that you're in, he's willing to help you learn how to use that program and create a notebook for our class that each person can have, and then they'll be able to use that OneNote program. So if you're interested, you can email him. His email is on the screen. He gave me permission to put it there, and he is willing to help you work on that. That is his volunteer avoda for us, volunteer service. Okay, does anybody have any questions before I go on? I'd just like to connect with everybody who's here. I hope that I learned how to use the technology better over the week so that I'm not going to lose... everybody. So I'll be looking at the other screen too, just so I can read questions. But if anybody has questions that they'd like to start with before I continue, please type them in now. Okay. I got no questions yet, so that's fine. Let's continue. All right. Here are some secrets for inner happiness. Of course, I can't tell you all the secrets because then they wouldn't be secrets anymore. But I'll tell you my secrets because my secrets are for sharing. I don't know the secrets that are secrets for not sharing. That's the truth. But all I can share with you is what I know. So the first secret for inner happiness is letting go. I tried to find a picture, really. I wanted a picture of hands and dove flying out because there is a letting go, a proactive letting go, not a... I wish I wouldn't have to let go, but an actual release that is important in inner happiness, realizing that so many different things, and we'll talk about different things to let go of, And some different things to hold on to, but really letting go is one of the secrets. A lot of happiness is blocked by wishing for what could be, or insisting that you're not that. I spent a long time on the phone with somebody recently who was telling me about a conflict she's involved in, and telling me that she's just not the type of person who's ever involved in conflict. And yet she was telling me this 3-year process that she got enmeshed in a pretty significant conflict. So I just helped her see that she didn't used to be the kind of person that was involved in conflict, but in fact, right now, she is. So she has to release that image of her that's blocking her from getting into touch with who she really is today. And so we have to release images of who we were, have to release dreams of what we wish, hopes that we wanted to have. All kinds of things are in our way. When we can release some of those, that will clear the way for some of the happiness. We're going to talk about the dreams that we want, because I've been pushing you to dream harder and set strong goals. So I don't mean releasing that, but we'll talk about what that means in just a minute. Okay. Here's one thing to release, and that's narrow thinking. When I was working on the shidduch of my eldest daughter, who it was not an easy shidduch to make because, she's a beautiful girl inside and outside, and I kept on having this feeling that the right shidduch for her was a young man who is a wonderful man inside with a very complicated outside because he's quadriplegic. Quadriplegic means all four limbs are affected by paralysis. His lower limbs completely paralyzed, and his upper limbs are have some motion. But in looking at my daughter, who was healthy and vibrant and had all her body works well, thank God, and thinking about matching her with him, it was a difficult match to think about, and yet there were so many things that matched them up. So I really had to talk to a lot of people about it. One day I was discussing, they did get married, one day I was discussing the match with my younger daughter. And as I floated the ideas past her, I said, you know, she's the right-wing child from her broad-thinking family, and he's the right-wing child from his broad-thinking family. And I just think, you know, in terms of families and family position, you know, that part is a match. So my daughter said, great, then they can get together and have narrow-thinking children. So that was her tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic little thought there. Nevertheless, many of us in the observant and growing community are subject to narrow thinking, and I do want to examine that shortly, briefly, just to think about it. I'm becoming I can't say I'm a confirmed Hasida, but an aspiring Hasida of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. I'm really appreciating his writings and his lectures that I'm listening to regularly now. So he just wrote a pamphlet. I put the website here on the bottom of the page in case you're interested in it. Pretty short. But he discusses, as he steps down from his position as chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, two large trends in Judaism that he's seeing or in the Jewish world. So I just quoted him here. These are the two huge movements that he is seeing. Jews, who are very engaged in the world, but who are losing their Jewish identity. And Jews who are very much intensifying their Jewish identity, but at the cost of disengaging from the world. And he feels strongly that this is not a tenable way to achieve the Jewish mission. I agree with him. We do have to figure out, not that it's my position to agree or disagree with Rabbi Sacks, but it's in alignment with the vision that I have, that which is really a Hirschian thought, that and a Torah thought, as expressed through of Hirsch, that our job is to transform the world. And we can't transform the world through isolationism. Anyway, so he has a little pamphlet called Engaged with the World that you can download from his website if you're interested in reading how he writes about an engagement in Judaism deeply and participation in the world in a way that sanctifies the Judaism and brings us to our place in the world and leadership, that ways that we could broaden our thinking. Excuse me. So that's certainly something to leave behind. But also, and more importantly, the narrow ideas that are hiding inside that narrow thinking that really hold us back. So here I want to share an email, a piece of an email that I got from somebody and I'll just read it to you. She writes, Aliza, I know this is quirky, but, you know, the morning blessing of thank you for not making me a Gentile? Well, not so fast. In your case, it was a great idea. As such, you weren't taught Judaism by ignorant or angry or otherwise poor teachers who essentially taught me that there is only one love, love it or leave it. Her attempt for a joke. Unfortunately, there is a gap in which I was taught, or I should say I was not taught, and it is, that the only right way to love God and do mitzvos is thou must, or thou will, suffer, and then go to hell, or suffer, or go to hell, or some variation of all the above. I'm 54 years old and wonder at times about Gilgulim and that stuff because I've stuffed a lot of living into a relatively short time. In my simple, single little life, I've been an FFB, and off the D, that stands for off the derech, no longer religious, now a gratefully aging, God-loving, but still a bit of a perplexed BT. So BT referring to Baal Tshuva, somebody who came back to religion. So I just want to share this. Like, it's interesting for me to see how many people who were raised religious, because she was raised in a Yiddish-speaking family, not Hasidish, but a Yiddish-speaking, I believe this person was raised in a Holocaust survivor family. I'll have to ask, double check with her. But she was really taught very harsh, a harsh picture of Judaism, which was taught quite a bit, and I believe is not an accurate depiction of Judaism, although it was one that was taught a lot, which is a suffer and go to hell model. You know, if you don't do it, you're going to be punished, and you're going to be punished hard, and it's going to hurt, and you're going to suffer, and after that, you'll go to hell and suffer some more because you did it wrong. So a lot of people were taught that, and who would want to stay if that's the way that they were taught? So those kinds of narrow ideas we definitely have to leave behind, and I do feel like that's one of the benefits that Baalei Tshuva and Gerim, converts, bring to the Jewish teaching world, now that there is a critical mass of those who are not raised religious but have learned enough and are acculturated enough to now share their Torah with others. I believe that one of the gifts that we as a group share is a fresh perspective, along with some passion, but certainly a fresh perspective on how to look at things. So on the one hand, we don't have roots, deep roots, and on the other hand, our deep roots are not tainted by strangulation around the roots that makes our thinking so narrow that we can't see the beauty of what there is in Torah that we have available to us. So that's also something to release, to let go of those narrow ideas. And they're actually lurking all around. So be aware of them. An important principle to keep in mind is Drachei Darchei Noam V'chol Netivotei Shalom. The Torah's ways are beautiful, peaceful, comfortable, pleasant. The Torah's ways are pleasant, and all her pathways are peace. If you are living in a reality where keeping the Torah or any part of the Torah is not pleasant or is not peaceful, you need to consult with somebody. It's important to figure out what's not working right. It doesn't mean that every time it's always comfortable in every situation, but in general, keeping the Torah leads to a life of pleasantness and peacefulness, and if that's not your experience, then there's some more learning that needs to be done and try to figure that out. So I encourage you to do that. Okay. Here's something to let go of, and that's our own vision of our own inadequacies. I like the image of Swiss cheese. I like the thought of looking at that hunk of cheese there and seeing all the holes and knowing that those holes are there on purpose. We're created with holes on purpose. The cheese was made with holes on purpose, and we individual human beings are created with holes on purpose. I liked this picture of Swiss cheese because it's a slice out of a hole, and we are also slices out of a hole. And in fact, if you look at the hole, you'll see that the hole has holes in it too. So we all have holes. So not only do we have holes by design, but the klal has holes. The whole community has holes by design. So we could get really frustrated with ourselves for all the inadequacies that we have. And we could get really frustrated with the community, with our friends, with our family members, with our siblings, with our parents, with our in-laws, with our spouse, with our children, with the whole community at large, with our leadership, with our elected officials, we could get really frustrated about all their inadequacies and all our own inadequacies. Or we could choose to switch to a view of holes by design. We're designed with holes on purpose. And every hole that we have is an invitation by Hashem, an invitation by God to grow and fill in that hole. That is part of the co-creator process, that God invites us into the process of creation and says, I'll start you off and you finish the job or you work on the job. It's up to you to continue the growth process and become who you want to be. But I'm going to make you with empty spaces so that you get to have that role as creator in your own life and in the life of the community, that we can start to fill in some of those holes. So that's really an empowering thing. If you look at it in a way, the more holes we have, the more empowered we are to become godlike and to create and to fill them and to become who we desire to be and to contribute to the community to fill in those holes with our own flavors. So we could see it. It's not exactly a half empty, half full cup situation. It's really deeper than that, to see those empty places as actual invitations to growth and contribution for ourselves and for others, that other people's holes are also invitations to growth and contribution. And it's their opportunity to emulate Hashem and to become creators in the world and contribute in their own unique way as well. So if we can let go of whining and moaning about our inadequacies, if I would move the camera around, right now you could see a lovely clean background behind me, but I made sure to close the door so you can't see my jewelry making behind that and the drawers that are open behind that. And you can't see my desktop, which has quite a few piles on it. I think I've mentioned in a different shiur, I'll just mention it again, how I've spent a lifetime being a little less organized, or sometimes significantly less organized than I'd like to be. And I've learned a lot of coping mechanisms, and I'm handle it pretty well at this point. Nevertheless, there are more piles than I would like in my life. Desktop covered, art table covered, or kitchen table covered, or kitchen counters covered, or whatever it is. I'm good at making piles. Happens to be one of my strengths. And sometimes it's frustrating to put them away. Happens to be one of my weaknesses. So one day my daughter came over, who's very good at making piles disappear, and not just by hiding them, but by actually putting everything away. And she worked with me for a few hours, but as she walked into my office a few weeks later and saw the piles again, I said, oh, when will I ever learn how to keep my surfaces clear? And she looked at me and said, Ima, get over it. You're not going to learn it. You know, you're almost 50. You've been working on this your whole life. It's not something you're going to learn. So she said, that's why you have daughters, right? So I just thought that when she said that, I felt so released. I was able to release this inadequacy that I've been holding on to my whole life. When am I going to learn to put away my piles? You know what? I'm almost 50. I'm not. Doesn't mean I'm not going to still work on trying to keep them under control. But I could let go of that inadequacy and look at the other things that I have, or try to use that as an invitation to figure out how to hold on to less, let go of some things, and also see the gift that I have. Okay, if it's not my own organization, I have a gift in a daughter who's able to help me with that. So that's a place that we can let go of feeling frustrated about how inadequate we are or others are around us. One of the secrets to happiness is release and let go. I'm just going to close the door because I hear my dog in the background. Sorry, I just don't want her to come in and join us. Okay. What about holding on, though? We want to make sure that while we're releasing, we're also going to hold on. There are certain things we really want. Like, I can't say it's top priority. I would really like to have clean surfaces, even though I'm releasing the fact that I'm not a pile reducer, I'm a pile accumulator. But certainly there's other things, holding on to certain dreams, holding on to certain goals, even goals that seem very elusive or very far away. We want to hold on to that which is important and release that which is unimportant. So, and that's part of inner happiness, is figuring out the tension between the holding on and the letting go. So what do we do about that? We do have to recognize that we have to live inside a tension of opposites, that there is a concept of pulling the rope from both ends, that there is the need to hold on to the desire at the same time as one lets go of the inadequacy or lets go of the incorrect dream or the hope that won't be realized. So there's a delicate balance in that, but sometimes it really has to be a tension that's maintained. So I do want to share with you a story that I wrote about attention. That's an important tension. And this is part of the request for me to share more of my own stuff in the class. But I think I'm going to actually read the story because I did spend time making the words go the way I want. So rather than just retell it, it'll take about the same amount of time, I think. If you want to find it to share with anybody, it's on aish.com or it's on my website. So the story is called Am I For Real? A Shema story. Okay. There was a little voice of doubt that worried me. What if I was a fake? I converted to Judaism when I was 16 years old. I loved being Jewish, and I wanted to be as Jewish as I could be. So 6 months later, I went to Israel to learn Torah for a year. My family thought I was in a phase that would pass. They were being tolerant. My friends thought I was finding myself and that I'd soon find my way home. But in Jerusalem, in learning Torah, in Judaism, I knew I was home. Even before I converted, the first mitzvah I kept was saying the Shema. I learned about it in the book To Be a Jew, and I memorized the transliteration and said it in Hebrew and in English every night before I went to sleep, just like it said to do in the first paragraph that follows. I even wrote it on the doorpost of my bedroom, as it said to do. And you shall write these words upon the doorposts of your house, in Deuteronomy 6:9. I had not yet seen a mezuzah at the time, so I took the words literally and used a black magic marker to write directly on the door frame, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Since the day I stepped out of the mikvah and became a Jew, I had no regrets and never looked back. I loved God, I loved the Jewish people, I loved the land of Israel, and I was thrilled to be part of it all. And yet there was a little voice of doubt that worried me. What if I was a fake? What if my family was right? I was young after all. What if it was a passing phase? I thought I was solid, my commitment was firm, but I had heard disheartening conversion stories of others in both directions. The Jew who converted to Catholicism and even became a priest, but who wanted Kaddish recited at his funeral. And the Catholic who became a Jew but recited the rosary on his deathbed. What if in the moment of truth, I wasn't for real? I was happy to live as a Jew, and I wanted to die like a Jew, but not for a really long time. How would I know that my conversion really worked? I continued to learn and grow as a Jew. I spent a second year in yeshiva. I served in the IDF. I married a wonderful man. I covered my hair. We kept Shabbos and a kosher home. We went to Russia to visit refuseniks. I became a mother, and I continued to learn. My life was so good, it almost seemed surreal, and still I wondered, could this really be me? Am I for real? One night, my husband and I went on a date. We left our sleepy town of Long Beach, Long Island, in search of some place that was still awake. We chatted amiably as we joined dozens of cars on Sunrise Highway, when suddenly our car began to spin uncontrollably across the four lanes. We didn't know what was happening, but we knew we were going to have an accident. As I braced for another car to plow into us, I cried out, Shema Yisrael! Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad! Then our car came back under control, and despite so many cars on the road, we were not hit. We drove back across the highway onto the right side, and we continued on our way, unscathed but not unaffected. As we sat there quietly driving safely together, I realized the gift Hashem had just given me. I was only in my early 20s. I didn't have to wait for my deathbed to find out. Just a spin across the highway, and I knew I was for real. Looking back on this story almost a quarter of a century later, I know that realness should be a regular question. Although I've never again wondered if I was really Jewish, I often reflect on how real I am being in my personal journey. I'm very impatient and very demanding. I want to know all of Torah. I want my character traits to be refined. I want my language to be used only for constructive purposes. I want to be a caring and helpful wife. I want to be a present, loving, and wise mother. I want my kids to be perfect. I want to be an effective and inspiring teacher. I want to publish books. I want to create revolutions in thought. I want to be part of perfecting the world, and I want it now. And yet, I don't learn as often as I should. I don't speak as nicely as I should. And sometimes I'm distracted as a mother and my kids are only partially perfect. My books remain unpublished. My revolutions are going too slowly to make a huge impact. And alas, the world is not yet perfect. The time is short. The work is extensive. My roadblocks are many. Do I really want what I say I want? Sometimes I wonder if I'm passionate enough. Sometimes I wonder if I can be patient enough. Passion, patience, they're opposites. Passion says, go for it, all of it, now. Patience says, it takes years, decades, a lifetime to accomplish all this. It is living in the tension of those opposites that real growth can occur. In the words of Rabbi Avi Fertig, it is pulling the rope at both ends and pulling hard. Hopefully, perseverance is the third voice. It says, I'm your tool. Stick with me and you'll get there. During most of the year, I struggle for balance and I strive for perseverance. But during the month of Elul, I believe that passion should get the lead role. Elul is the time for dreams, for brainstorms, for thinking big, for discernment, for goal setting, for creating potential. The last 6 days of the month is the time the Almighty created the world. He created a new reality. And during those days each year, from the 25th of Elul till Rosh Hashanah, the energy of creating a new reality is available to each one of us. Who do I want to be? How real do I want to be? What goals do I want to set? Think big. Nothing can stand in the way of desire. I can want whatever I want. With God's help, I can be whatever I choose. Now is the time for passion. Patience will just have to wait. Okay, so that's the story. Thank you for saying don't let the piles disable me. I appreciate that. That's the story, but I just wanted to read it, both to share with the story with you, but to show you that tension of pulling the rope at both ends, that you do have to have the passion, and you have to have the patience, and somewhere you have to find the perseverance to keep pulling hard, because without passion, you can't go, and without patience, you can't achieve. So you really do have to sometimes take that rope and pull, 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 and stay pulling. It's not that one side's going to win. It's that both sides have to keep pulling. Does anybody have any thoughts about pulling the rope at both ends? Is there something that pulls you in your life? I'll let you type in if you'd like to. Okay, nobody's typing right now, which is fine. I'll let you just listen if you want to. Okay, so if we're pulling the rope at both ends, and we sometimes feel inadequate, so how do we get to a place of really feeling excited about who we are, even in the midst of our inadequacies? Okay, good. Here's a somebody wrote in that they feel the tension, family role versus out there, affecting the whole world role. Right, so there is that tension of pulling, and that's an excellent example, particularly for a mother of a growing family with children that span the spectrum. In this case, this person has children between the ages of, I think, four or five, and mid-teenage. So it's really a pack of children across that growing spectrum. And it really is a challenge. What do you do in that stage of mothering, and parenting? What do you do with your desire to really affect the outside and the children right in front of you, and also your knowledge that those who are right in front of you are your tools to affect the world on the outside? So you certainly can't ignore creating a little power-packed world effectors under your roof, and at the same time, you want to take your energy and spill it outwards as well. So that's definitely taking that rope and pulling it at both ends. You've got to work on both at the same time. And in general, at that mothering stage, is focusing family first and as much extra time as you can without ruining family. You want to be able to focus outside as well. If it works, it has to be reevaluated on a regular basis. Let's think about this concept of Gadol HaMetzuveh, because I think that can really bring us to a place that we don't often think about. So we have this question, which I hope I didn't discuss. I looked through all the other PowerPoints. I don't remember saying it. I do, thank God, teach a lot of classes, and I'm never quite sure where I've discussed what, but this is bringing it to a deeper level, even if we did discuss it. So the classic question is it better to keep mitzvahs because you're commanded to keep them or because you're a nice person and you feel like keeping it? Let's just say giving tzedakah. Is it better to give tzedakah, to give charity, because you have a commandment, thou shalt give charity, or because you're really nice and you want to share with people? So the classic answer to that conundrum, what do you think? Just does anybody have that? Okay, good. I'm going to tell you what Gadol HaMetzuveh means. The classic answer is, it's bigger of you. It's a harder thing to do. It's a more important thing to do. It's a more worthy thing to do to give that charity because you're commanded. So the question is it bigger, Gadol? Is it bigger because you're nice, or is it Gadol because you're commanded? So the answer is Gadol HaMetzuveh. Greater is the one who's commanded. So mitzuveh is from the word mitzvah, but this is the, I guess it's passive. Mitzuveh is the one who is commanded. Greater is the one who's commanded than the one who's just nice. How do we understand that? So level one of understanding that, and the reason why it has to stay in Hebrew, you'll hear, but Gadol HaMetzuveh, greater is the commanded. Reason number one, that the person who's commanded is greater than just the nice person, is because it's actually harder. Once you're commanded, it's harder to do it, because somebody who's commanded then develops a yetzer hara, an evil inclination that pushes back against the commandment. So a nice person can say, oh yes, I want to help somebody, I'm going to give them tzedakah. And then as soon as you're commanded, there's a pushback. Well, wait a second, you can't be in charge of me. I'll have to do that if I don't want to. I'll give you, for instance, just this week I was at Walmart, and there was an old guy kind of bent over with his cane in the cart and a brace around his waist, clearly having a hard time pushing his cart up to the checkout counter. And he had some pharmacy items, you know, powder and earwax remover and whatever old guys need in the cart, along with some groceries. And he was short on the money. He was about $13 short. He just didn't have it. He was counting out. He looked in his pocket and he looked in his wallet and he took out his change and he counted it out. And he started to look in his cart what he should take out, but none of the stuff was really extra stuff. So there I was behind him, and I'm with my son Uri, and I'm thinking $13, it's not that much really. I have $13 I could give an old guy, not a Jewish guy. I mean, I don't know if he was Jewish or not. I don't think he was. Certainly not anybody I recognized. So I thought to myself, I could really give $13. It's not a big deal. This guy could go home with what he needs. So as he's counting, my son and I exchanged glances. We agreed that we're going to do it. I took out a $20 bill, and I traded it with the clerk for a $5 bill. And then she recounted up his money, and she said, oh, look, you do have enough. He said, I do have enough? She said, yeah. He says, I didn't think I had that. She said, no, the lady behind you helped you, but you do have enough now. You can buy those things. In that case, it was very easy for me to give that money. I wasn't commanded, actually. There was no pushback. If somebody would have told me, it's going to cost you $15 to walk into Walmart, or there's a mitzvah and you're required, I might have said, $15? That's a lot of money. I don't know if I want to give $15. But here, there wasn't a yetzahara against it, because this wasn't actually a mitzvah. It was a chesed. It was just a flow of niceness, but it was a very easy, unopposed act to do. But once you have a mitzvah of it, if somebody would say, take whatever's in your wallet and tithe 10% and give it to charity, you might feel like, well, that's a lot of money. I just got paid. You know, and I don't really want to give you $100 out of my $1,000. Look, $100 is a lot. And the Yetzirah pushes up against it. So that's level one. Gadol ha-metzuva means you're greater if you're commanded because you overcome the Yetzirah, the evil inclination that pushes back against it. But actually, it means something much bigger than that. Gadol ha-metzuva, according to Rav Hirsch, means think about how nice a person is, right? You're only as nice as you are. What if that old guy needed $75? I would not have put in $75, right? Or what if he needed something else? What if he was really stinky and he needed everything carried out to the car and somebody had to walk next to him or take his arm and he smelled terrible, right? Maybe I would say, you know what, I'm nice, but I'm not that nice. I'll push his cart, but I'm not putting my arm through his arm because he's unstable. I don't know what it is, but you can imagine. There is an edge, a limit to how nice I am, to how nice you are, somewhere, even if it's far, there's an edge. How do you get past that? How do you become greater than who you are? Because that's really our task, is to become bigger than how we're born, right? We come into the world one way, and hopefully we exit it in a more capacious way, a greater way than the way we entered it. How do we get bigger than we are? We can only push ourselves to our own limits. So Gadol HaMetzuva means somebody who enters into the commandments becomes bigger than they are because they tap into a system that pushes them outside of their realm of comfort, outside of their realm of nice, right? Let's say you're not the most social person. You don't really enjoy having guests over. So you don't ever invite guests because you enjoy them. But now somebody calls you and says, we're making a Shabbaton. We need an extra bedroom and a Friday night meal. Can you take care of that for us? So you'll say, you know what? Actually, it is a mitzvah to participate in this community stuff. Oh, fine. I'll do it. But you wouldn't have done it on your own. You did it because it's actually a mitzvah to participate in bringing Jews closer to Torah, to creating that Shabbaton. You're not making it, but you're providing the bedroom and the meal. So you have just become bigger because you said yes. You tapped into the mitzvah system and you've become bigger. That's Rav Hirsch's explanation of Gadol HaMetzuva. But let's take it a step further. Gadol HaMetzuva means you're not just by yourself. Once you tap into the mitzvah system, you're connected to all the other people that are in that system as well. So you become bigger that way too. You're no longer, that's why I picked this picture, you're no longer just the individual sitting alone. You're gadol. You're much bigger because you're tapping into a whole group of people who have tapped into this system. And by each person plugging into the system, we've plugged into each other as well. And therefore, there is a shared energy, a bursting of energy, like we see in this picture, that we do have a shared consciousness, hopefully a sense of shared goals and shared means to accomplish those goals. But we do become bigger than just us, our little old selves. So this is a concept. I would say one of the tricks, one of the secrets of inner happiness is Gadol HaMetzuva. Tap into that system of commandments and you become bigger. You tap into more. You become more capacious and you're able to push yourself beyond how you started in this world. Any questions on that before I go on? Okay, we'll go on. If you have questions, you can still put it in. Here is the thought, one of the other secrets. Again, these are my secrets because these are things that give me inner happiness. So this is the concept of arivut. Arivut in Hebrew is spelled ayin. I should have written it in Hebrew. Ayin resh bet is the root. Erev, arivut, is mixed together. Erev is evening. Evening, it's the same root as the word ma'ariv from the evening prayer, but erev is evening. So think about what evening is. Even in English, evening is the mixing of day and night. It's not Lila, and it's not Yom. Erev is that mixing time. Arbev in Hebrew is to mix something up. Irbuvia is a mixture of things. So Arivut is the mixture of us Jews, that we are all connected one into another. So that's why I picked this picture. None of us stands alone. We are all connected one to another. It's interesting that... I wish I remember who said it. I learned from Rabbi Oppenheim in Charlotte. He told me the story of a trial. Wish I could remember. There's a blood libel in Russia not too long ago, maybe 100 years ago, where somebody stood accused. We could really just imagine Gilad Shalit. We don't have to go all the way back to Russia, where a Jew is in danger. And what happens? One Jew is in danger, and the whole Jewish world prays for him. Everybody feels it. Everybody felt the tsar of Gilad Shalit sitting in a prison cell for 5 years. Everybody felt the tsar of his parents and their pain and their wishes for their son. And everybody thought about it as his birthday passed. And he was a year older, and he went from 19 to 20 to 21. The pain that the mother must have felt and the disassociation that he must have felt and the aloneness. We felt it with him. Maybe not fully. Unfortunately, I mean, and fortunately, we go on with our lives, but still, he's one of ours, and we felt it. We Jews care about each other. We number each other carefully. It's actually interesting. A lot of times when I tell my conversion stories, almost the first question, almost every time from the audience is, what did your parents say about that? And it's such a Jewish question. Protestants never ask that question. Jews know that one person makes a difference. One person in a family is counted, and one person in a family is lost. Whether it's in your nuclear family or in the family of Klal Yisrael, we matter to each other, each and every one. In the Protestant world, though, if you convert out, so, all right, you're going to burn in hell. But whatever, it's not a loss to us, the Protestant people. It's one soul that's going to burn because they chose to reject, whatever. But not by the Jews. By the Jews, we care about each and every one because of Arivut, because we are connected. And that's why when there's bombing in the north of Israel, so a Jew in America who has an apartment in Jerusalem is going to open their door to complete strangers to move into their apartment, because they're not complete strangers. They're family members that we haven't met yet, because we are connected one to another. So, and not only are we connected one to another, but our mitzvah observance is connected one to another. When we talk about 613 mitzvot, there's 613 mitzvot, but there's no one Jew that could do all 613. Some are just for Kohanim, some are just for judges, some are just for women, some are just for men, some are just for Levites. It's not possible for one Jew to do all 613. It's only by collective participation in the system that they all get accomplished. Okay, so that's collective participation in the system that they all get accomplished. But what about in a generation when there's no temple? So none of the temple mitzvahs can get accomplished. So Arivut is not just lateral in this generation that I'm connected to another Jew in Israel. There's a Jew in Israel who doesn't keep Shabbos, but they live in the land of Israel. They keep the mitzvah of living in the land of Israel, while I live here in Denver, Colorado, by choice, living in exile. Right, but I do keep Shabbos, and the two of us together balance each other out in some way that I do something that they don't do, I contribute, they do something I don't do and contribute, and we are all contributing together to the collective keeping of the amount of mitzvahs that are available to us today. But again, it's not just lateral. Once you're Jewish across the ages too. So our Arivut is not just this generation, but it's all the generations that came before us and all the generations that will come after us. We're connected with all of them. So a lot of people will wonder, I mean, there's a classic question, certainly in observant circles and religious circles, how are we supposed to merit the coming of Mashiach? I mean, look at us. We're so far from Sinai. All the generations have degenerated so much that if Rashi didn't deserve it, if Moshe didn't deserve it, if Yehoshua ben Nun didn't deserve it, how are we supposed to deserve it? So it's not that. It's not that we're going to go up to a high enough level to be able to deserve it. It's that there's a collective keeping of the Torah in different circumstances that as a nation we accomplish together. And each one of us contributes our own piece to it. So let's say a Jew 150 years ago struggled with keeping Shabbos, was willing to, when they came to America, that's not 150 years ago, 120 years ago, and they came to America on the Lower East Side when all those Jews from Russia came, many of whom chucked Shabbos overboard, as their boats pulled into New York Harbor, and some of whom tenaciously clung to Shabbos, which meant losing their job every week and being hungry and not having enough money to pay rent for their family. It meant being cold and hungry with children. Right? So there were Jews who did that. That's not our challenge today. Anybody who wants to keep Shabbos can keep Shabbos. It's really not a question. But those Jews weren't challenged with computer screens and smartphones and the relative comfort that we have today. You know, they're not challenged with living in a time of affluence illness, where we're all distracted by the wealth that we have, even if we're not wealthy. We all have full bellies and a roof over our heads. So it's not like in the olden days where we were challenged by other things. Our challenge is to try to focus in the face of all these material distractions. So it's not a challenge that Rashi never faced this challenge. Whatever challenges he had, they're not ours. And whatever challenges we have, they're not his. So we all are connected to each other in that we all contribute our generation's challenges and overcoming them or working with them to the collective whole and our individual challenges. My challenges are different than yours, and yours are different than the other person on the computer in the city next to you. So we're in the house next to you. So each one of us is connected to the other, and we all contribute our own life's work into the arivut of the whole. So that means that while each one of us is extremely important, each one of us is also carried by the whole. So we want to do some carrying, and we want to also know that we're carried. So arivut, the concept of being connected one to another, for me, is a real source of inner happiness. I know that I'm connected to a broad, deep, and long-spanning people that hopefully I'll be contributing to, and that also carries me along in their flow. Okay. Now, here's another secret of inner happiness, and that is feeling directed. Here, I'm going to admit to you, even though this is private, somehow I'm sure it's going to be public at some point, but I do occasionally watch a movie. I know, you didn't think I did, but I do. So here I'm going to quote one. So I put the Marigold Pictures there, because this is from, I think it's called The Great Marigold Hotel or something. It's a chick flick. But it has a line that I really liked in it. So the line is, in the end, it's all going to be good. And if it's not good, it's not yet the end. So that's not a quote from Pirkei Avos, but it might as well be. It certainly is Jewish philosophy, or a philosophy that Jews hold dearly. In the end, it is all going to be good. And if it's not good right now, that just means it's not the end, right? It doesn't mean that in our life everything's going to work out great. But for the Jewish people and the destiny of the world, which we are connected to, it is going to all be all right in the end. And if we're in a place of not all right, it just means it's not the end. So we can definitely see that in small, in our own lives. It definitely happens that we go through hard times, and it will be okay in the end. And it also happens that sometimes times are so hard that it won't be. Although oftentimes, again, depending on who we are and the tools that we have, we can be in charge of making it okay, depending on how we shift our feelings. But anyway, this is a concept to feel that if it's not all right, it will be in the end, but feeling directed. So for this, we really want to go into a deeper level of Gamzu Latova, of this too is for the good. So Gamzu Latova, this too is for the good, does not mean that we have to just stuff away somewhere how we're feeling, that we have to just stifle our feelings that this is harsh and difficult and just say, gloss over it with a statement, this too is for the good, this too is for the good, this too is for the good. But we do have to have that phrase at the ready inside of us. But really underneath it has to be the deeper understanding that Hashem runs the world. He knows what he's doing. He absolutely has you and your best interests in mind. And if it's happening, it must be in the end for the good. If you can feel the direction, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's painful, but at least feel that Hashem is taking care of the flow of the direction of your life. You get to pick inside the flow. Your choices matter. Nevertheless, Hashem is the one that runs the flow. He is directing things. If you can tap into the feeling of Hashem's flow, that Hashem is directing the world, and that the flow is going towards resolution and positivity and the revelation of God's oneness in all of this, then you can tap into a sense of happiness, even in the midst of pain, even in the midst of hardship, even in the midst of bitterness. If you know that there's a flow that underlies the whole thing, that's headed in a direction of positivity, you can feel happy even in the rain. So that's why I chose these marigolds, not just because of the movie that the initial quote came from, but because there's darkness and brightness. So I chose the dark behind to show the difficulty, but the bright in the forefront just to show that it's up to you to tap into, even in the midst of darkness, send your roots down and tap into the flow of Hashem directing the world, and you will be able to have little bits of shiny sets of you inside the more difficult times. And we'll get into that a little bit more when we do the class in dealing with difficulties next week. Okay. Here I want to introduce, everybody's aware, I'm sure, in this class of the concepts of Hashgacha Pratit, or sometimes pronounced as Hashgacha Pratis. So that's the presence of Hashem, the desire of Hashem resting on an individual person alone in their journey, and who they meet in their journey, and what they encounter in their journey. But the understanding, Hashgacha Pratit, is the understanding that each and every person has a flow of divine energy that's specifically guiding their journey. Again, you get to make the choices, right? So in this picture, you get to make the choices how you move your oars, which direction you go in. But Hashem's in charge of the lake, right? He's in charge if there's going to be a wave ahead of you, or if a fish jumps over you, or whatever it happens, if the Loch Ness monster comes up from the deep and tips you over. That Hashem gets to pick that. You don't. You get to put your boat in the water, but Hashem's Hashgacha Pratit decides how your muscles work, how the water works, how the weather works, all of that. You just get to decide what you do inside the flow of Hashem's private guidance of your life. But a lot of people are not familiar with the concepts of Hashgacha Klalit, or Hashgacha Klalos. It's not something we discuss regularly, but it does exist. If you're interested, look deeper into the book, Derech Hashem. There's a whole section on Hashgacha Klalit. But Hashgacha Klalit is that Hashem runs the world. There is a general direction for everything in the world. And the reason why I picked so many flowers here is that it's not, we do have a concept that that nothing moves without an angel hitting it and it moving. But it doesn't mean that each flower has its own Hashgacha Pratis. It doesn't. Each flower has its own Hashgacha. Hashem is in charge, but he rules them in a different way than he rules human beings, or that he guides human beings. That there is a sense of general, how many orange flowers should there be? These are poppies. Or at least when I looked up poppies, this is the picture I got. How many orange poppies should there be? How many yellow poppies should there be? How many other flowers should there be in between them? So each flower, let's just say Hashem says there's got to be 100,000 orange poppies on this mountainside, right? So there still is a level of which poppy is going to be one of the 100,000, but it's not that each poppy is evaluated for its contribution to the beauty of the mountain before it gets decided if it's going to be one of the 100,000, or now that the 100,000th and first blossomed, which one has to wither. There isn't that type of, there is the giving life to each of the 100,000, but there isn't the type of examination which each individual one gets to be part of the 100,000 because of their engagement in the world, unless it has to do with the Hashgacha Pratit of a human being. So let me just tell you how they interface a little bit. Let's say there has to be 100,000 of a certain kind of dog in the world, 100,000 terriers, right? And some of them are wild. I don't know if there's any such thing as wild terriers, so I'm sorry for my ignorance on that, but let's just say, right? The wild terriers, there just has to be 100,000, and they have Hashgacha Klalit ruling over them. However, once you adopt one, then you, the human being, are affected by that terrier's health, life, and death. And so that terrier will then enjoy your Hashgacha Pratit as it extends over that dog and overshadows the Hashgacha Klalit. Meanwhile, we'll leave that little philosophy lesson to the side. Just if you understood that, great. And if you want to know a little bit more, you can either look in Derech Hashem or listen to, I have a whole series of Derech Hashem classes on my website, which you can access if you'd like to. Or you can email me about it if you'd like to also. But the purpose here is to understand that the world is run. Every aspect of it, in general and in particular, is paid attention to so that we can relax and let Hashem run it. So here is the concept. Trusting in Hashem, here is a secret for inner happiness that has to do with the Hashgacha Pratit and the Hashgacha Klalit. Trust Hashem and know that He runs the world. And you can release the cares and concerns, not release your walking on the path. So I chose this path picture because you can't see the end. You can see the path in front of you. You don't know what's ahead of you. You basically, and of course this is only a mashal, a parable, you cannot extend this 100% to reality. By looking at that path, you pretty much know it's going somewhere. Right? I mean, that's just the picture there. It's worn enough that you are guessing that there is a destination, and you feel comfortable walking along that path and until you get to the end of it, even though you can't see it, even though you don't know what the end is. There is a comfort in this picture of being able to walk on that path. In life, we can also look at a picture like this and say, you know what? Hashem made a path for us. I don't know what lies around the corner. I don't have to know what lies around the corner because Hashem does. And I can trust Hashem in the way that Hashem runs the world. I know that there's Hashgacha Pratis. And I know that there's Hashgacha Klalis. There's a path that He's in charge of. And He's in charge of what happens to me in my path as I'm walking. I get to pick how fast or how slow I walk, how long I want to spend on that walk. That is up to me. But as I walk, I can just go down the path and trust Hashem and release the concerns and let Him take care of it. It's a really, actually, it is a key to inner happiness, is knowing that Hashem runs the world. And I don't have to be in charge of it. I can let Him be in charge of it. And then I can release my cares and concerns and just do what I'm in charge of, which is be a mensch while I'm walking on the path. So we're going to end this shiur with relax. Hashem is in charge. It really is. It doesn't mean don't work. Again, that pulling the tension, feeling that pulling the rope at both ends and feeling that tension of opposites. First of all, yes, exhale and relax. It's great to know that Hashem is in charge. And absolutely, it's up to us to do our best with what we have on our journey. But what we can release is our concerns about having to organize everything, run everything, rule everything, control everything, because we think that we can. We can't. All that we can control is our decision right here, right now, what we're going to do right now. Hashem is running the whole thing. So we can release our sense of care and concern about the end point, the destination. Just point ourselves in the direction that we think we should be headed in. Of course, check occasionally with others. Make sure you head in the right direction. But in general, you get to relax along with working so that you don't have to. That's why I didn't put, I looked for a picture here and I thought about relax. I could put a picture of somebody in a lounge chair or whatever. That's not the kind of relax I mean. I don't mean just chill. I mean, let go of the agmat nefesh. Let go of the worry. Let go of the being fraught with thinking that you have to run it all. Relax that way. Hashem's in charge. Just do what you have to do. So those are some of my secrets to inner happiness. Let me see what somebody is writing here. You're describing emunah at this last point. Is there a reason you're not using that word? Is emunah different than what you're describing? Absolutely not. This is emunah. This is actually bitachon. So I'll end on this nice mashal for emunah and bitachon. Synopsis for 1 minute, yes. So I'm going to end with this concept of emunah and bitachon, right? So what is the difference between emunah, trusting Hashem? Well, we say faith, it's not faith, but knowing that Hashem is there and He runs the world, and bitachon, total trust. So I got this mashal, this parable from Debbie Greenblatt. I like it very much. So imagine a tight rope stretched across Niagara Falls, and the best tightrope walker in the world is standing there. He's the guy that walked across the Twin Towers, so he knows how to do it. I actually watched a movie of this guy, how he walked across the Twin Towers, and it was petrifying even just to watch it on a computer screen, to see him that high up and walking in the wind on a tightrope with no net below him. So imagine, you know he did the Twin Towers, you know he can walk across Niagara Falls. It's not a problem for him. He's done that kind of thing before in the wind. So Emuna is saying, I know you can do it. But Bitachon is the willingness to ride on his shoulders. Right? That's really trusting Hashem. Really trusting Hashem. I know Hashem runs the world. Bitachon is really saying, I could totally put myself in Hashem's hands and relax. I'll do what I'm supposed to do, but I trust that Hashem is in charge. So that, I would say, is the synopsis. If you want, we'll go back very quickly through all the slides just to give you the nice review here. So here are your secrets. Let go of that which you're not in charge of, especially narrow thinking, narrow ideas. Realize that our inadequacies are invitations for us to grow. Hold on to dreams that you should be holding on to. Don't let go of everything, but that leads to a tension. There is a tension of opposites. Let's pull the rope from both ends. We become greater when we tap into the mitzvah system. We can go beyond who we are and even beyond what we can accomplish alone, because we tap into the connection with others, arivut, the connection with others laterally in this world and throughout the generations before us and in front of us. We have a much greater connection than we think. We're much bigger once we connect in with the rest. Feeling directed, even in the darkness, we can shine in the light. Even when times aren't good, we know that in the end it's all going to be good. So we can tap into that feeling that in the end it's going to be good, and if it's not good, it's not yet the end. Hashgacha pratit, Hashem helps direct our own life personally, and Hashgacha Klalit runs the world. You don't have to worry who got elected. Hashem's in charge of that. That's part of the Hashgacha Klalit. You do have to vote. I'm not saying you have to vote, but it is our job to cast our vote, and it's Hashem's job in the end to pick the person that runs the world, because, or that runs different countries in the world. Obama doesn't get to pick if he presses the button for nuclear bombs or not. He only gets to pick, really, his bechira chofshit, his free choice is limited to his own personal stuff. Things that have to do with world order is not up to him. That's up to Hashem. Trust and release. Hashem runs the world. You can release it and just walk forward. Relax. Hashem is in charge. So that's the synopsis of today. And we are great. And we are going to next week work on dealing with difficulties, the heavy difficulties. So if you want to email me a few difficulties that we should be focusing on for next week, not the difficulties that from which you can do tshuva, but difficulties that you can't necessarily change or are really heavy in your life, please email me and we will discuss that next week. Thanks. It was great spending time with you all.